off adrenaline. Pour a cup of my medicine. So high. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. TNT Hoops, episode 8. I'm here with our producer, Derek Slang. What's good?
What's up?
I'm also here with Quitty Slang. What's up, baby?
Yes, sir. Quit Bucks in the building. What's good, Ansel?
Nothing much, baby. How are you?
Chilling, man. Listen up real quick, though. I know y'all hear that Timmy Swerve. Y'all hear that Timmy Swerve knocking. That's my boy. Follow him on Instagram and Twitter. Same thing, Timmy Swerve 13. I know y'all hear that that music knocking. He an up-and-coming artist out of New York. You know what I'm saying? So follow my boy.
So thank you for joining us. We're fresh off of watching the 106-102 win against the Miami Heat in the Wells Fargo Center, bringing us to 38-21 on the year.
Big W.
Yeah, playing the first of three games without Embiid for this week's stretch as he's being evaluated for left knee soreness, as released yesterday by the Sixers around, what, like 12 o'clock?
Yeah, around that time.
So just give me your thoughts. What do you think of, I guess, our first game back from the All-Star break, about a week off? Jimmy looked fresh. Tobias played well with 23 points, 10 rebounds, 1 assist, shot 8 from 15 from the field, 2 big threes late in the fourth after not really shooting well from beyond the arc. Boban gave us some really good extended minutes.
Huge minutes from Boban. Huge game from Boban, yeah. Like, period.
Maybe a little bit more than we would like.
Minutes-wise,
just, or maybe on stretches for like 10 to 12 minutes, sometimes when we think we should be playing 8. But he gave us 19, 12, and 2 assists.
Right.
Ben Simmons with 21, 7, and 4. And then JJ rounded it out with 13. And I forgot Jimmy with 18, 6, and 6 as well.
So right.
Just give me your thoughts from
so, yeah, so my thoughts looking at that box score, we seem to be a top-heavy team right now. And I know that matters in the playoffs because, you know, your top 7 or 8 guys have to be rolling. You know what I'm saying? You have to have 7, 8, maybe 9 guys that you can play out there that you know are going to produce. And our top 5 guys, no matter what the night is, usually seem to be, you know, balling, whether that be, you know, Ben, Redick, Butler, and Tobias. You know, those guys, we added Boban in the night. He played 27 minutes, like we said. It might be too much, but without Embiid, I guess you have to play him a lot. But I'm seeing a better defensive bench, right? Those guys aren't really scoring how we'd want them to score yet. Yeah. Jonathan Simmons only had 3 points tonight. You know, James Ennis scored, only shot the ball once in 8 minutes. Mike Scott, 1 for 5 with 1 3-pointer. So those guys need to find their offensive niche a little bit on the bench a little better. But I think we have a more, you know, a top-heavy team where we know our top 5 guys are going to produce and our bench is kind of getting stops and, you know, not letting, you know, us lose leads or, you know, if we don't have a lead,
the
they're
Heat
not letting
stuck around
extend.
Tonight, which I think is what you're alluding
right.
to.
The Heat are always a well-coached team.
I think
team.
They were up like 97, 95. And then when TJ came into the game, I think it was his first time checking. Not his first time checking, it was his second time checking in. But he played, what, 8 minutes and gave us four points in the fourth quarter, mm-hmm. 2 boards, 2 assists, 2 steals. And so it really felt like he was effective in those stretches tonight, giving
right.
us a
spot. Forgot about TJ. Actually, a big TJ game. Only 11 minutes, you said, but you felt every minute he was on the court. I saw a tweet that said you feel every minute, you know what I'm saying, TJ McConnell's on the court. And that was the type of gritty, you know, 10 minutes we need to play him. Because if you play TJ more than, you know, 16, 17, that's when he starts getting exposed. Anywhere to that in that 20 range, that's when he starts getting exposed for what he is, you know, as an athlete, you know, only being 6'1", 6'2", you know, with not long arms and not a crazy wingspan. So seeing TJ in that shorter role, I actually like that a lot more.
Okay, so looking into our next games, we have Portland on the 23rd at 1 o'clock mm-hmm. Coming to the Wells Fargo Center.
Yeah.
Dame and CJ coming in. Dame's actually been on a little bit of a tear since I kind of gave him shit 2 weeks ago for him and CJ not being able to maybe carry them through the West, but he's turned it on a little bit, I think averaging around 26, 6, and 2.
Right.
But what do you think about that game at 1 o'clock? How do you think we should
1 o'clock, yeah, it's early game. Those games are usually weird, but, I mean, I think that we are in good shape, and we have enough firepower even without Joel to beat that team. You know, we have to defend, obviously. They got two guards that really get them going. So if you limit them or make them shoot a high volume of shots, I think we're in a good spot. I think we have more firepower than them, like I said, even without Embiid. So I think that can be a win, especially at home.
Okay. And then we go down to New Orleans for an 8 o'clock game. I think Anthony Davis will be playing. He's suspected to play tomorrow night as well. So
right.
By then he will be in a nice little rhythm and hopefully reacclimated with the team. And it'll kind of just give us a good challenge to see if we can guard a guy of his stature without Embiid for extended minutes. Like, probably, I don't mean, he's not going to play 30-plus minutes.
Right.
But probably around 25, I mean, 30.
Yeah, nobody can guard Anthony Davis. So it's like he's one of those guys where you just have to contain him.
But how well do we contain him?
I think we ultimately win that game, too. I think we have more firepower than them without Embiid. Just with, having four guys in your starting lineup that you know are going to, score upwards of 15 to 20 points. It's just so solid to have, mm-hmm. That even with Simmons, Redick, Butler, Tobias, right? And then you need one or two more guys to chip in, whether that be Boban, TJ, maybe Bolden off the bench without Embiid. Maybe Simmons or Ennis, one of them get off one of these games. I think with just having that solid top-heavy, lineup, that we have enough to beat.
Yeah.
New Orleans as well.
So after that game, then Embiid should be reevaluated on that Wednesday, which would be the 27th, and then the next day we would play OKC. So if he's cleared to play, we would, I guess, be bringing him down for the trip.
So he'd be reevaluated next Wednesday.
Yeah, and I guess we probably the team would fly out probably 2 days before that. So
right. So
judging on what I guess they see,
I don't
Monday,
think
Tuesday.
Yeah.
Then he probably doesn't make that trip to with us down to OKC.
Yeah, I don't think you play him. I personally think you wait for the next matchup against Golden State, and you rest him one more game. But it all depends on, how the knee's responding, right? That's what was kind of confusing, where Brett Brown was saying, maybe the rest off was counterproductive. Maybe it didn't help him, right? So, all right, well, you're going to give him more time off, so now you're giving him 2 weeks off, with the 1 week of the All-Star break, because those guys aren't really doing much. And then you give him this week off, so I don't know. Maybe I think the way I look at it is I kind of think this was all predetermined, and they decided we're going to give him 2 weeks off and, go leading into that last stretch
also
of the season.
See what you can get from Boban and Bolden.
You learn what you have from your backup bigs, and you try to get healthy. You probably get Zaire back, probably not. You try to get healthy, though. Maybe Patton. He's been playing a lot in the G League. So, I don't know. You try to see what you have and try to get Jimmy and Tobias to get a nice little groove,
My kind of thinking on that, though, is if you were to bring Embiid back, because right now we have 23 games left, and knowing him and his competitive spirit, he may want to go for the MVP, or he's not going to win it, but he's a competitive guy, and he wants to at least try to put himself in the race. So wouldn't you want to bring him back for that OKC game just because Golden State is coming to Philly on the 2nd of March, and so you kind of want to have him tuned up going into that game because his last game of competitive basketball would have been against the Knicks.
Right. I'm fine with him sitting out, would it be four games if he sits out the OKC game, or that'd be three? That'd be four. Sit out four games, sit out a week and some change, and then you come back Saturday night in your building against, the world champions, right? You just beat them. They should be looking for revenge. You see how you match up against them if you do get to the finals. That's your aspirations anyway. Yeah. I don't think you rush them back to play against OKC and take that trip unless he's really healthy and this was a predetermined, decision. If he's good to go on that Thursday, then you let him play. But I don't think you rush him back if, it's not responding how they think it was, or
yeah.
I don't know how they really are going to look at it.
And just for me personally to close, I think that in this particular stretch, I want to see Tobias and Jimmy really kind of just take over for the team and kind of carry us through. So if we should go 3-1, kind of given the stretch without him, because we've already beaten Miami, so it would just be Portland or New Orleans that we just have to knock off. So.
Right. Yeah, I like I said before, Tobias and Jimmy, they have to get that groove going. You know what I'm saying? Being that second and third option of offense, they have to find spots where, they can be effective.
Yeah,
and hopefully Joe can watch. Like, he's not stupid. He has a high basketball IQ. How he pick up games so fast. He can
see
watch
where
them.
Fit into that.
See where they'll, where
and
they
it's
like
weird.
The ball.
Let me just kind of give you a picture of the numbers because they've been on and off since Tobias has arrived.
Right.
He had 14 one night, Jimmy had 22. It flipped. Tobias had 22, Jimmy had 13. then right, Tobias it's all at about, 10, Jimmy at 22.
Right, it's all about who's getting the, you know, who's kind of, who has it rolling. You know what I'm saying? Tonight, it was good to see they both had it.
Yeah, 23 and 18.
So and 18 for Butler. You know, Butler didn't shoot that well. He missed a couple easy ones at the rim. That would have been 22, 24 or so. Yeah,
that's the perfect amount of
That's perfect.
Offense from both of those guys.
And another thing before we, to wrap kind of the Sixers, you know, our Sixers-based topic up, I want to see Ben, you know, continue to build that, like, all-around game. You know what I'm saying? Like, whether that be post feeds, whether that be pull-up. And I saw that tonight. You know what I mean? I saw him take a dribble pull-up into a 15-footer at the foul line. You know what I'm saying? He got it working down on a block. We were saying how scary it could be if he just became a, you know.
Turned right over that right shoulder after he put in Winslow.
Dominant post player. Like, what if he just turned into a dominant post player? Like, you know what I mean? That's another dimension to his game. Plus, his him being a dare in transition and being able to find anybody at any time at 6'10" at that speed. So,
didn't have the best game in transition tonight, but I like it.
I want to see him keep building his all-around game, you know, without Embiid, becoming more aggressive, becoming more of a scorer, as opposed to just being a facilitator the whole time, being a threat at all
it's
times.
It's weird to say that because he had 21 on 9 and 19 shooting. So, like, if I were to tell you, like, hey, this
9 and 19. That's
this guy had 21. Yeah.
Like, but whatever.
He had 21 points and he shot 2 jump shots. Like, I mean, I don't think many people would care. So at the end of the day, he's still a really effective basketball player. I think that's where I always want to tail back to.
I mean, yeah, no doubt. I mean,
I never want to make it seem like I'm complaining about
it. You know, we value Ben Simmons over here, man. We ain't those Ben haters. So,
all right, lead us into the next topic. What do we got next?
What do we got? So we got. So the other day, you know, sure, most of you heard if you follow Scottie Pippen, right? This dude is back and forth with his opinions. Last year, he was
hitting with the long nose, pro Scottie LeBron. Pippen.
Yeah, he was pro LeBron. And now he's you on some weird stuff. He was pro LeBron. Now he's MJ's greater than LeBron. Kobe's better than LeBron, you know. It's kind of like kick LeBron while he's down. He got hurt. His teams, you know, might not make the playoffs this year. They're reeling. So it's kind of that.
So Scottie,
you know, he said what he said. He's basically saying Jordan and Kobe are better than LeBron. So what we kind of wanted to touch on is, you know, his era, right? You know, those guys he played against. And we'll keep it simple as far as, you know, the legends. So we'll talk, you know, Jordan, you know, Magic, Larry Bird, guys of that nature, you know what I'm saying, guys that were dominant in their era, and we're kind of going to kind of compare them to, you know, an NBA guy now and kind of how their skill sets will kind of, you know, fit in today's game. So, you know, first one we should touch on, obviously, he set the standard of what the GOAT or what the greatness should be is just Michael Jordan, no other than Michael Jordan. So what do you think, you know, MJ would be in today's game?
So taking your question, I kind of take it and tailor it into which one of these guys can lead a team of NBA individuals now to a championship with their style of play. And with Michael Jordan, just given his skill set and everyone, like, I don't have to run down the list of what he can and cannot do. I do think that building a team, I don't think the triangle offense would necessarily work in today's NBA, but I do think you could build a team around that efficient scoring wing that can also play at the other end of the floor.
Right.
I think the best comparison that I could give to him today, like Kobe recently retired.
Oh yeah, Kobe.
But
you don't have the.
It would be DeMar DeRozan, but to like a rich man's version of DeMar DeRozan. You know what I mean? Like not like DeMar DeRozan's kind of the shitty version of Jordan now.
I mean,
if that is
you
a,
know
a,
me. I'm so pro new school, so I ain't gonna be super disrespectful here, but. I mean, if we just talking strictly skill set, like why wouldn't DeMar DeRozan be Michael Jordan like at that time? Like
you
that
bugging,
was
you
how
bugging,
he played.
You bugging.
I'm not bugging. It's just a different. It's
yeah,
a different
we're not
game.
Gonna get into like the inflation of what Jordan
yeah,
would probably shoot
yeah.
six or seven so, threes
yeah,
now.
It's
not
a, so let's
three.
Just say that's a great comparison. Yeah. But just for the sake of if you guys want to know my personal opinion, like you know that's kind of how I look at it. You can't work your way backwards. We see how those guys played and
yeah.
That's a good comparison. So our producer seems like he wants to chime in for a second. So, Derek, what do you got to say?
That's crazy to me, DeMar DeRozan. They have similar things, but.
Okay, let me clear it up because I know a lot of people are going to go crazy.
Jordan, Ansel, DeMar DeRozan. Ansel Jackson compared, you know, no. Jordan, Jordan to DeMar DeRozan. And I actually took it a step further. I said that, you know, if you put DeMar back in the day, why couldn't he be Michael Jordan? So I don't know.
I'm not saying they're the same kind of player. I'm just saying the style of play and, like, what Jordan did is what DeMar DeRozan is currently doing.
He backpedaling now.
Right? But DeMar DeRozan is the shitty version of what Jordan would be. So Jordan would be that A-list version. So he could do all the things DeMar DeRozan is doing, but also spread it out to the three-point line. Also abuse you in the post if he needed to. Not disappear in the playoffs, which is...
Yeah, that's a huge part of basketball, actually. And he just... I was looking at his game logs the other day from some of those rounds in Toronto, and that was so horrible. He was a max player.
3 for 21 shooting.
That was crazy.
Let's go to the next guy, though. So
that was Jordan, yeah, you know, MJ. If we keep it as simple, I mean, he compared to Kobe. We saw that Kobe dominated this era with his style of play.
But we wanted to Jordan was just as good, now,
if not better. You know, that's kind of the common consensus. So,
who would you compare him to? I just out of curiosity. But playing now, like I obviously Kobe, I would.
DeMar DeRozan, that mid-range style. I mean, I guess that's the best you can kind of say. Nobody really plays like Jordan. You know, DeMar does have that. You know, maybe he works from the mid-range, that 15-foot area with footwork and all that. So that's a good comparison, I think. But obviously, all time, I'd say Kobe was obviously the most similar. The closest. To him. So what's the next guy? Magic Johnson. I'll talk Magic first, and then I'll let you say.
Okay.
I think Magic, obviously, with the style of play back then, you know, the three ball not being utilized as much, not being valued as much as it is nowadays. Magic's, you know, style of play wasn't exposed as much as a guy like Ben Simmons now. Mm-hmm. You know, Ben has such a similar style to him, and, you know, everybody shoots now. So, you know, you got the social media, everybody saying, oh, why doesn't Ben shoot? Like, would Magic have been doing the same type of thing? Would he have been the same type of player? Was he more of a general that he can, you know, like, learn those, you know, big man tricks that Ben Simmons was talking about, those big guard tricks? So, I don't know. I think Magic is, right now, obviously, Ben Simmons is the best comparison to him. And Ben Simmons is a, 16-8-8 guy? Yeah. 17-8-8 guy, so.
21 years old, so I think, yeah, third year in the NBA, you have to just give someone like that time to figure it out. And
right.
So, do you think Magic Johnson could play and be efficient? Not efficient, but do well in today's era?
If we're comparing him to Ben Simmons, yeah, he'd be doing the exact same thing or maybe more. I mean, I don't know, given...
I mean, he'd probably be doing a little bit more considering he's a better free throw shooter.
Yeah.
And that's very important.
More willing shooter, too.
More willing shooter, better free throw shooter. So you know, okay, he's getting fouled, he's shooting 8 free throws a game, he's making 6 or 7 of them, as opposed to Ben, you know, he's making 3 or 4 of them, right? Or five, you know what I'm saying? So he would average a little bit more. His career free throw, what is it? It might not be high, but I know later career.
It was high, 85%.
That's a great free throw shooter. So, you know what I mean? That's,
you put him on the line.
You add 4 or 5 more points to what Ben's already doing.
Yeah, and I think he averaged around 5 free throw attempts a game. So,
before we move on, I just want to take, like, keep in mind that we're comparing prime Magic, most likely, right? Magic to Ben Simmons.
Not HIV Magic?
Relax.
Niggas couldn't touch him at that point.
No.
That's the only reason he was good.
Literally.
No, because there was a time when they called him Tragic Johnson for being... Okay, cool.
That
was his first year in the NBA, but he still averaged 18, 7, and 7. So, like, you're calling someone Tragic, so, I mean... Yeah, it would.
His finals, he lost.
So his first year of the NBA, he made the finals, right?
He won the whole joint.
In 1979, people were still calling
him. He won the whole joint in 79, but they didn't call him Tragic until he choked against Boston.
Was that the 80s?
That was like fifth year, something like that.
I mean, so you're calling a guy Tragic, but he averaged 16-10. And so I'm looking at that 16-8-10.
That's media. So I'm saying people like the big guy that can't shoot, they always going to get criticism. LeBron, I mean, he can shoot, but you know what I'm trying to say. Those versatile guys.
It's not necessarily like a pure shooter.
Yeah, you know, they're always going to get criticism, so Ben's going to be good.
Right. Yeah. All right, so next guy we had, moving on from Magic, was Larry Bird. I think this is an interesting guy. So what do you think about Larry Bird? How would he fare in today's game?
Larry Bird is, I'm trying to find a comparable player to him now, because there isn't really a guy that is 6'8", but that moves on the wing at, I guess Luka maybe is the closest thing right now to what Larry Bird was in his prime. And I know Luka's not in his prime, but that's the only thing in the NBA I can think of right now.
Like, yeah.
He can work from all three levels, pass as well. Luka doesn't really pass out of the post, but mm-hmm. Bird did that a lot, worked really well with McHale. But,
yeah.
So I think Bird, I don't think he could carry a team to a championship in today's NBA. Mm-hmm. Granted, that Boston team with Parrish and all those guys was outstanding, but like right now, if you gave Bird just the average NBA team, like they'd probably make fourth, fifth seed in the playoffs, but he wouldn't be one of the transcendent guys like Kevin Durant, Curry. Like he wouldn't be in that conversation in today's NBA. He would be like a 22-8-8 guy, maybe. Maybe that's underselling it, maybe for the people that saw Bird play, but that's just an opinion off of from what I've seen.
So quickly, so that means we don't think Luka could carry a team to the conference finals.
To the finals.
Or finals, yeah. We'll just say
no,
finals.
That's not. That's a totally different conversation. I don't know what Luka can be because it's his first year.
Okay, fair enough.
But I kind of see Bird doing that, just given his speed and
style of play. Yeah, I think it's a pretty good comparison. I don't know. I think Luka, from what I've seen, you know, at least, Luka might be a little bit better of a ball handler, a little bit more crafty. I mean, Larry Bird was hella crafty. If anybody was a crafty ball player, it was Larry Bird. But, you know, what I see him talking about, what I love to say is using angles, you know what I'm saying, being able to take the ball to different spots on the court off the bounce. I see Luka being able to do that more, more of a point. You know, point forward type game. Although Larry Bird did play that way, but I think it's a pretty good comparison. I think Larry Bird would be good in NBA. I don't think he'd be as good as he was back then. Just off the athleticism factor. You know, guys will get up into him and just be able to, you know, pressure him more. You see 6'9", you see Pascal Siakams way more often than you see them back then. You know what I mean? And those 6'9", 6'10", you know, stretch fours.
They can stay with you.
They can guard you as opposed to, you know, those you know, those bigger, you know, 6'9", 270-pound traditional fours that they used to play against.
The
you know
guy
what
that
I mean?
Was paving his driveway in the summertime with a bad back. Like, yeah, you're not cooking them on a night-to-night basis. So, I don't know. And that's also grand to say maybe Larry Bird would be in better shape. Let's get one more guy in there. What do you think about Charles Barkley? Do you think he'd be better or worse in today's NBA?
Charles Barkley, I think that's a great person to discuss right now. He's actually on TV. I'm looking at him right now, the big Chuck. But, yeah, I mean, I think Chuck will be good. I think just the style of play, they compare Zion to him, right? And you see what Zion's doing now. He probably isn't as athletic as Zion is. Well, he's even said it himself, but that was the style of play, that dominant, everything, that brute force to the rim. You know, I'm going to work harder than you. I'm going to grab this rebound over you because I'm just going to work harder than you. You know what I mean? That Sean Kemp type, you know, hyper style.
Yeah, Barkley was 6'6", 252 throughout his career. Was like his average.
Yeah, so that's just a big dude. So I think, I mean, but there's no hand check now. He could dribble. He could put the ball on the deck. He can shoot the mid-range. He can shoot the three to an extent. So, and he's a pretty good passer. So, I mean, I think Chuck will still be, you know, a pretty dominant player in this era. I don't think he'd be I don't know. What do you think as far as, like, comparing him now? I mean, then to now, like, as far as his production. Like, his production would be, like, more, I'm guessing?
He's an ambidextrous Julius Randle that, like, has more control over his game.
I mean, Julius Randle averages, what, 20 this year?
Yeah, around like 18, 20. And Chuck in his eighth season in Philly was 23, 11, 4, and 2 steals a game. And then four of those boards were offensive rebounds a game, which is nuts. And also shot 57% from the field. So just observing his game and kind of lining it up to other, like, point forwards in the league, I think he would have the ability to push the ball on the brick more. He'd probably do it like we see Draymond doing it consistently, especially on like a lesser team with not a lot of star power. So
yeah, so I think just a couple more guys I wanted to discuss. Just, you know, guys that come up in discussion. You know, they were, you know, great guards back in the day. I want to know what you think, how they'd rank up compared to guys, you know, now guards now. So I have Isaiah Thomas, two championships with Detroit, the Bad Boys. Yeah. He was that original point guard on those teams. I think he'd be able to
stay on the floor and guard, and like guys like Steph Curry, like he would give them issues on both ends of the floor. You know, like he wouldn't be one of those guys that would think I guess it's just difficult to compare these guys to the guys now because they're obviously fast for their era, but I don't see, I guess, Isaiah Thomas as being like a superstar point guard.
Disagree.
All right, so like, what about his qualities would say superstar because, in today's NBA game? Like, and when I say superstar, like, you have to think, like,
I don't
think it's very hard to be a transcendent point guard in today's NBA. Like, Kemba's a great.
He could do everything young Chris Paul could do. Because remember, that was Chris Paul's player profile, Isaiah Thomas.
So, Chris Paul's a better point guard than Isaiah Thomas was.
What better, like player
if I,
point guard?
If I had to rank the top point guards.
Like passing-wise? Like, I'm just talking about style. I'm not even going to talk about who's better and who's not. I'm just talking about their styles or what were compared.
Okay.
So, my thing is speed no matter what time you're playing. Isaiah has speed and...
What else? What else would make him a superstar point guard in today's NBA?
Core vision, killer instinct.
So, Isaiah Thomas's averages through 13 seasons, I think. Is this
so, I got him right here. So, his averages through 13, Quiddy taking back over. 19, he averaged 19 points, 9 assists, 4 rebounds. His best year stats-wise was the 84-85 year, where he averaged 21 points, 14 assists, two steals, and only, you know, 3 turnovers. So
that sounds like a guy that controls the NBA for like a year or two, but then kind of falls back into the fold of like the high level all star guys. Like he wouldn't be a superstar on a year to year basis in today's NBA game.
Yeah, his numbers, he had Chris Paul type numbers for the most part, 19-9. That's pretty much right on Chris Paul's. I think Isaiah Thomas would have been a Chris Paul type player. I don't know if he was necessarily as skilled as Chris Paul, just how crafty Chris Paul is. Chris Paul's smaller than most guards now, and I know IT would have been the same exact way. I know he could really defend, but I guess that, like our producer Derek said, they have the same player profile, so I guess, you know, they'd be similar in terms of production and, you know, how they will maneuver in the NBA streets.
As an aside, I know this isn't on the agenda, but I think Chris Paul would have played in, what, 3 championships if it weren't for injuries? Like, so think about that, those Clippers years, like, when after he beat the Spurs, like, off the glass, like, over Tim Duncan and, like, pulled a hamstring, he didn't make the finals that year because he was hurt. Last year against the Rockets, and I think there's one more. So, like, Chris Paul, if his career had gone the way just as expected, I don't even think it would be close. And I guess that's why I got so upset when I heard you compare both of them, because just thinking of what Chris Paul did in his prime, it was just
Isaiah dropped 26 on the sprained ankle in, like, 1 quarter.
He played on a football team, though. Like,
what?
The Pistons, like, what they're allowing the Pistons to do at that time.
Oh, you're saying that his team was a football team?
Yeah,
okay.
No, I mean, I'm just saying, like, I was just talking about as far as, because it's not just about stats. About
Chris Paul played with Blake and DeAndre Jordan, was pushing those teams. Like,
no, Chris Paul's my guy. I'm just saying, like, if Chris Paul can play, like, if Chris Paul's snapping right now, and Isaiah has similar tools, then, you know, he has similar tools to Chris Paul. I'm just saying he could hang as a superstar in today's era also. Plus, the spacing's better.
Okay. So, Isaiah Thomas and Chris Paul is the common comparison. I think we can leave it there. There's one last guy. I don't know how much you have pulled up on John Stockton, but I thought he was a really important guy to go over because he was a beast. Numbers-wise, his effect on the game, I don't think John Stockton ever won a ring, right?
No.
Him and Malone, they never won a ring. But Stockton only averaged 13-10 on his career. But his career year, well, he always averaged above 10 assists, which is kind of ridiculous. So it was like a stretch from 88 to 96 where he averaged 14.5, 14, 14. Like these, he's basically the best passer ever, assist-wise. So what do you think his impact would be? What would be a 6'1", 170-pound yes, I'm going to say a white point guard because, you know.
You don't see that.
That has an effect on, you know, the athleticism for the most part, usually. What do you think John Stockton would be in today's NBA? Like, who would you compare him to? 6'1", 170, basically can dime anybody off because he's averaging 14 assists for multiple seasons.
There, but the most recent, like, would obviously be Nash. But,
right.
And just thinking about how – and I like to preface all of this is I didn't watch any of these guys. Like, I'm 23 years old, so – my takes on IT and Stockton like are just from what I've seen on like the throwback games and league pass and stuff like that. So, but for Stockton, I think it's the same thing. Like, I to be a point guard in today's NBA game, like 14 assists is nice, but like I think you do have to be like a scorer at some point, right? Or am I off by that? And not like a scorer like 18 to 20 a game, but I don't think the 14 assists isn't as valuable.
It's not cutting it.
Yeah, maybe that's what I'm trying to say. I don't know how to say it. Like,
not 14. You saying 14 assists to go along with 13 points isn't. If you're getting, you know, 20, 22 points, 20 and 20 range, anywhere from the 18 to 22 range.
I'd like to see his usage rate too from that time period because it sounds like he just had the ball and kind of not assist hunted, and it sounds kind of disrespectful.
No, but you have a point. Because from what I remember watching,
not to cut you off, Derek, but Derek is our, you know, Derek's a little bit older, so he, you know what I'm saying, he can kind of give us his insight a little bit better.
The I don't know the usage rate number because that's not a number that was cool back then. But from watching, it looked like he dribbled around. But there's also times when he pulled Alonzo, he just did the right pass.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it really depended on the situation, which right. is what I liked about him. He made the right plays.
Right.
I guess just my overview consensus is, like, looking at like him and Malone, like, if one of those guys wasn't on the floor, like, I don't look at John Stockton like, all right, he can win us a game tonight in a playoff series.
Good take. I need to throw this in. When Malone left them for the Lakers, he still got him in the playoffs. It was the year the Lakers lost to Detroit. Right. So, in every year. Is
different than going.
No, like I see what you're saying. I'm sorry. Go ahead. You were saying something.
It's just getting to the playoffs is different than going to the Western Conference or
okay.
like and competing, you know. So it's there's different levels of what you're doing.
Yeah, definitely. But you know, it goes back to the narrative of who gets there by themselves. But you know, I see your point.
Yeah, listen. I mean, John Stockton. My final take on him is he's 6'1", 170. That you can't hide that. That's smaller than T.J. McConnell. He would have got pushed around.
On defense, yeah.
He would have got bullied on defense. Yeah, he's one of the all time leaders in steals, if not, you know, top three or whatever he was. But
there has to be a separation.
Yeah, he would got absolutely murdered on the defensive end. So we'll leave it there, John Stockton.
Okay, let's go into our next topic of Zion Williamson. So last night on the 21st of February, Duke UNC at Cameron Indoor Stadium. I think it was like the first play of the game, Zion Williamson going from left to right across the free throw line. I guess stopped on a dime and went through his shoe. His left leg went through his shoe, ultimately resulting in a sprained knee. I would like to note that shoe was a Paul George 2.5. So I think the topic of discussion today just was the outrage of, once again, college players not getting paid because everyone freaks out that, oh, Zion didn't make a dollar from that game, and should he play the rest of the year? So, Quiddy, what are your thoughts? And do you think he should step back on the floor, given that the injury isn't serious? Do you think it's hurting his value for him to play and maybe risk another potential injury?
Right. Yeah, so, I think he should – if Zion Williamson, the way I look at it is, all right, obviously he's a prized possession. You know, he's probably the number one pick in the draft right now. He doesn't have much more to prove, you know what I'm saying? If he doesn't play another minute, you know, this season, his stock probably won't drop, you know what I'm saying? It was a freakish injury where his left foot went through his left foot went through his sneaker, which, you know, caused an impact on the other side of his, you know, body when he kind of split. So it was, you know what I mean? It was a weird off ball, you know, non-contact injury, right? So I think if he is healthy, he should absolutely play. Just as a competitor, I'm pretty sure the kid wants to play. I mean, you you don't just stop. Like, you started playing, like, you finished what you started. Like, you don't just, oh, I'm going to quit in the middle of the season because, you know, I'm potentially whatever on the next level. Like, no, this is the only time the kid is ever going to, you know, play on the college level. Only time you can compete for a national championship with his brothers. Like, this doesn't just come, you know what I'm saying? This is an actual experience. Like, yeah, he's always going to be an NBA player next, but this is a part of the process, and this is what he chose. So if he's healthy, I think he absolutely should play.
So from the devil's advocate standpoint of it, I would like to start with, I do think that there is something important to once you sign up for something.
Do you think he should play?
Well, I'll get to it.
You don't have to say it's devil's advocate. If you think he should play, then you think he should play. Like,
from a life standpoint?
Yeah, just from if you're here.
No, and I'll explain to you now.
Okay, go ahead.
The NCAA and just the NBA forces you in this kind of position. Mm-hmm. So as a player coming out of high school, you are forced to go into the NCAA and give a year of your eligibility and your basketball greatness to them and for them to profit, right?
Right.
Zion Williamson has already played however many so games for Duke. He has proven himself to be a viable basketball player and that he will be able to play in the NBA, correct?
Correct, yeah.
From what you've seen of him being on SportsCenter on a night-to-night basis, like, how much revenue do you think he would generate just as an NBA player?
A lot.
Right? And so being the number one pick in the NBA draft, he would get from DeAndre Ayton's numbers last year, if he would have entered from high school, he would have gotten a $41 million contract for his rookie year and $18 million guaranteed, right?
Yeah.
Plus $100 million shoe deal, right?
Okay, I understand. Like, yeah.
I'm going to continue. So you only have one chance in your life to potentially be that rich and you know what I mean, to live a luxurious life for you and your family and your family's family, right? How many chances in life do you get for that?
One. How many chances do you get to play college basketball?
So would you value playing an NCAA championship over all of that and taking care of your family?
If I was healthy, yes, I'd play. Yeah, I would risk it. I mean, I'm playing. He got hurt on a non-contact injury. That can happen anytime. He can be practicing, he can be working out, and that can happen.
So why even risk that at Duke anymore? But like, the level of that rises more when you're playing basketball for free.
Right. Yeah. But you're kind of just downplaying the whole competitor aspect.
It's very important. It is very important.
I mean, that's,
and it sucks that the NCAA has forced their players into that position for them to.
He's accepted it. He could have won and played overseas.
Yeah, that's such a null argument because you're not going to do that. I understand.
What do you mean?
Like, so you said, I know. You could go overseas and you could go and. You could go get a check and come back over here.
But there's people that do it. So
if
it really came down to it, if that's really the route he wanted to go, if he didn't want to go to college, if he didn't want to go to school, he wouldn't have done it. And he decided to. And what, he got hurt, once again, on a non-contact injury. And
if it happened at the first game of the year, maybe it's different because, like, all right, we haven't seen anything on Zion. But it's halfway through the college year.
So I understand
they've played 24 games.
That aspect
matters. Proven his worth.
Right. Okay.
So once you've proven your worth as this is it, this is what you are, like, as someone that is looking to take care of his family for the rest of his life, why even say, hey, I'm going to go back and just play for these people for free after I'm selling $2,000 courtside seats?
I think the thing here is y'all both do get each other's sides of the debate, but I think y'all just not agreeing. So I will ask this. Is there anything for a player, Zion's ability to gain from playing college basketball?
Other than camaraderie and the feeling of playing with RJ and Cam and those guys for 1 year?
He could get sharper, maybe.
What?
Yeah, I mean, you guys experience, you know, just playing in big games. That's all part of it, right? Being able to play in the NCAA tournament, all kids grow up wanting to play in that. Like, you can say NCAA is corrupt all you want, and I actually
not
agree with that.
Not everyone is Zion Williamson, is what I'm saying. Not everyone is a $100 million guy.
That's
like, his,
fine.
His every step is worth millions and millions of dollars.
Like, I wouldn't – if me – I'm saying me personally, I wouldn't live my life like that. Like, I'm not about to tell you, not about to tell me –
You don't have to live it for long, just for the next – He has to live until the draft.
So you're telling me he was playing all year. He was a part of the team. He was a part of the team, brotherhood, whatever. They break the huddles. He's in it. Family on three, whatever they say, he's in it. And he gets hurt one time, and he's like, nah, this ain't worth it. Nah, I ain't planning this. I can get hurt and hurt my drock staff. Like, he's going to the league no matter what. unless that man gets shot.
So if that knee sprain turns into a torn meniscus, then what?
He's going to the NBA.
Oh, boo.
You think if Zion Williams, first of all, if he tears his ACL tomorrow, he's still a top three pick. If he tells his ACL tomorrow, he's still a top three pick.
No, Quiddy, I disagree.
Why do you disagree? Joel Embiid, Dennis Smith tore his ACL both twice in high school, once in high school and once in college, and he was a top 10 pick. And Dennis Smith is nowhere near Zion Williamson. Bro, these athletes are completely different now, man.
His career isn't the same, man.
Like, he can get hurt doing whatever, man. If he's healthy, go play, dog. Go play. Don't let all these old dudes and all these analysts and media tell you, oh, no, you're worth this, that, that. Yeah, yes, you are worth all that. But this is a once-in-a-lifetime experience. You started it, you finish it.
No one ever wants to look at the guy that tore his ACL and didn't make it. Like, it's not fair to me.
So because he sprained his knee.
It's the risk.
Every time you step on a basketball court, you risk injury.
But not everyone is risking $118 million. Some guys are risking, maybe I just made a play for the rest of this year.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to agree to disagree, but I'm a competitor, and I believe the kid's a competitor.
It doesn't mean you're not a competitor. That's exactly what it means, bro.
That's exactly what it means.
I just don't think that's fair for you to say, because you've never had that, oh, Quiddy, so you know your family could be comfortable forever.
Right.
All you have to do is just breathe until the draft. Or you can go step on and just maybe.
But you're saying
small possibility of you getting hurt.
Okay, but all the factor, everything has to factor in. Everything, this is the last thing. Everything has to factor in, right? So you're saying breathe. So that's a different scenario. Saying breathe, like breathe, meaning okay, like
he just
you're
has to
really
live
risking
until the draft. He literally just has to live until the draft.
So if he's healthy next week, no, don't get on the basketball court. You're done. That's it. He's healthy. Next week, I
would present this option to him. I am not telling him because I hate to be those people that are like, Zion definitely shouldn't play. Like, if he wants to play, let the kid go on and play. But that is a real, like, as a man now, because like I think sometimes you have to put having fun and being a man and separate the two things.
Right.
Sometimes you kind of just have to put the fun aside and say, listen, I'm going to be working. This unpaid internship is over. My real job starts in a couple of months. And I'm going to start preparing for that. And that's what I'm putting forward. And I understand that until the NCAA changes or they let guys go straight from high school, because he definitely was eligible and he definitely would have been the number one pick this year. I think that's the route guys are going to have to start going. And that it will make the NCAA either, one, start to allocate their athletes for their fair value, which I think is really important. Not everyone, like a D3 athlete, is going to make money, but if people are willing to pay you.
Shout out to D3 athletes, though.
Yeah, shout out to
DeSales University, baby.
Playing the championship this weekend on Saturday.
Yes, sir. And we're going to get that chip.
Out and someone will pay $300 to sign autographs, and so be it. Go do that. And it's just anything in the world, people are allowed to get paid their fair value, and I want the same thing for NCAA athletes. So
I agree with that.
Don't bring in all these people to Cameron Indoor Stadium, and Zion doesn't see a dime. And then if that injury was worse last night, he doesn't get a dime more, except for his insurance policy, which is shit, by the way. $8 million if he goes less than 16. So that's really all like I kind of just had on Zion, and I know that we all agree to disagree on that topic, but
yeah, my biggest thing. You say let him breathe. I say if the kid's healthy, let him play. Shit, he's playing basketball. That's what he's done his whole life. Go compete. Go play. Go to NBA next. It's the next step. But I mean, just to wrap things up, since we're already on the college discussion, I wanted to get a little. You know, a discussion about
this, like, feel of the guys that we're looking at.
Yeah, the top prospects. You know, draft. Basically every draft you have maybe two or three, if not even that, maybe one or two guys that, you know, are actually franchise players. The rest are usually role players. You know, you get later in the draft, those guys are out the league in 2-3 years. Mm-hmm. So these are just guys that, you know, I look at and I think, you know, they can be not only in the NBA for a long time, but, you know, playing at a high level and being, you know, that first or second option on any NBA team. So, obviously, we got Zion. We talked about him, 22-9. Shooting 68% from the field. Just ridiculous. Just a brute force.
Misconception that
a fright train
you by strength.
Right.
He's completely wrong.
Right.
If you watch him, He just chooses how he wants to be. If he wants to beat you on the block from the mid post, he can beat you with quickness and speed. And if he does decide to give you the quick bump, then, you know, it's a bucket that way as well. And I think my favorite part about his game is just how active he is.
So active. You can't teach that. I mean, just having a kid play hard, like, you, that's, some kids just don't do, you know what I mean? Some kids take possessions off. Zion's one of those guys where not only is he the best athlete on the floor, but he's working the hardest. Yeah. So that's definitely a great part of his game. His motor is crazy. And you see a lot of guys that are talented as him, you know, they try to have that smooth approach where they're trying to conserve energy. Like, he's going all out at all times. And once he, you know, learns to control that a little bit better and just keep, you know, improving being – you know, just that well-conditioned, high-energy, active guy. He can be a really scary piece in the league. I think he can be a franchise guy.
Yeah. Next, we have the 6'3", 19-year-old from Murray State, Ja Morant. Right now, he's averaging 24.3 points on 50% shooting from the field, 10 assists, 5 rebounds, 2 steals a game. What are your initial thoughts? He wasn't really on the map last year for – just basketball fans, but I think he's kind of just...
Yeah, I think that kid is a problem. You know what I'm saying? He was giving me Markelle Fultz vibes just off the fact that he, you know, doesn't go to the best school, you know, top major. But I think he has a little bit different game from Markelle. You know, they both are super athletic. You know, they're crafty. They can use angles to get to different spots. But Morant's what he's averaging. His numbers are crazy. Averaging 24 points, 10 assists. I think he's leading the country in assists. 10 has to be the highest in the country. Mm-hmm. And 5.5 rebounds. So, you know, he's doing it all. On 49% from the field, 33 from three. So he's a respectable shooter from the perimeter. He shoots 80 from the line. So you see somebody shooting 80 from the line, they, you know, they naturally have a good form. They, you know, he's going to grow and keep growing as a shooter. His NBA comparison is De'Aaron Fox, right? Yeah. He's a
streaky high tempo.
He's blazing speed in transition in a half court. I think he's going to be a hell of a player. 6'3", but he's long, too. He's like a wiry 6'3", you know what I'm saying? What was his weight? 190?
Yeah,
around that. Yeah, 190, 195. It's like great point guard weight. And Lil, weight.
So. D-Lil selling a USA Today article in 2012, just kind of going to a smaller school. Like, so I think Damian Lillard went to Weber State. Like, you get a lot more focus on the defensive end and a lot more just schemes and doubles thrown at you. So I think it helps the NBA scouts evaluate you on a higher level.
It's actually really crazy cool. That Morant, this Ja Morant kid from Murray State, we're talking about, he was on Zion Williamson's AAU team, the first AAU team Zion was on, but Zion Zion went to a different team. And, you know, Ja kind of stood out a little bit more and started racking up some offers, and he ended up going to Murray State and taking off this year. Another guy we want to talk about, Cam Reddish. You know what I'm saying? Let's just talk about them together. The Duke trio. We already talked about Zion. You got Cam Reddish and you got RJ Barrett. First to talk on Cam Reddish, sharp shooter. You know, 34% from three, only 36 from the field, so he's pretty inefficient.
Like 8 threes a game.
He's shooting 8 threes a game and 12 field goal attempts. So he's only shooting four twos a game. So, you know, he's really a sharp shooter right now. He's averaging 14 and only 3 assists and 2 boards. So he's not really doing much besides scoring the ball.
I mean, obviously he's going to come out for the draft this year, but it would be cool to see him stay. And that team just kind
of become
his
top
year and mold around him.
Right, but, I mean, you just used the argument for Zion. Like,
He's
a lottery pick, so you can't really.
I didn't get to see him just be the centerpiece of a team is what I want.
Right.
They look at skill sets.
Right. They look at skill sets, potential, yeah. Yeah, so Cam Reddish, his NBA comparison was Rudy Gay.
I like that.
You know what I'm saying? Can shoot the ball from the perimeter, can get to the rim and finish it, can cram it on you.
A little bit more crafty, though, off the dribble than Rudy Gay was.
Rudy Gay was really fucking good, so.
Back then, off the dribble, he used to.
Yeah,
like
Rudy,
crazy.
Yeah.
Where did he go to college again?
Connecticut,
UConn, definitely went to UConn. So,
and then with RJ Barrett, I have mixed feelings about him. He's obviously going to be a really good NBA guy, but
right.
I think his decision making right now, sometimes he does like to force it a little bit.
RJ, no doubt. So I see they compared him to Michael Redd, that lefty, you know what I'm saying, scoring mentality game, always on go. Yeah. You know, but he does have that Russell Westbrook in his game where he might shoot you out of a game because he's trying to win that bad. So that's something to look out for on R.J. Barrett. I was really high on him to start the year. I thought he was the number one pick just seeing his game in high school. But, I mean, he's impressed.
His feel for the game, I think, is just
He's lacking. He's not really a a point guard, but they're kind of
Forcing him to that primary ball handler.
You know what I'm saying? So that's all. I mean, that's going to help him in the long run. He's still averaging 24. Actually 23 a night, 23-7-4 on 45 from the field, 33 from three, 69 from the line. So he needs to work on his free throw.
This hasn't been talked about much, but maybe this is a little hot take. I don't think Coach K has done the best job with those three. I think it's been kind of a weird spot that he's been playing those three. And like, he hasn't let Zion really off the leash yet. Does that make sense? Like, I know he's still getting his number. He's still getting 30. So it doesn't.
I mean, Zion's not a guy you call plays for, really.
Not call plays for, but you see the spots they put him in, like, right below the
– I mean, he been getting 30, though. Like, he literally had 32 the night before he got hurt. He had 27 the night before that.
Do you see the way he's getting 30? I'm not just looking at the box score. Cause, like,
it's not just looking at the box score, though. He scores in transition, and, I mean, you kind of just – you square him up and let him go left. Like, that's just what you do as a coach. I mean, you throw lobs to him. Like, I mean, I think –
so you know you can do that every single possession. But I'm saying, like, I think we're not seeing – every single aspect of his game yet. Like, because they don't really let him shoot threes. I mean, he'll shoot them if he's open, or like if he gets that corner one.
I mean, he's not that good of a shooter.
I mean, I think he has a better he shoots the ball relatively, not well, but he doesn't have a bad 3-point shot.
Like, it's a slow set shot, but that's just, you got to respect this shot. Like, it's not like this is a threat. You can't
walk away. Like, he's not Ben Simmons. Coach K, obviously,
fine. They lost like,
I guess I just don't like seeing RJ. Three games. Gonzaga, UNC.
I'm saying before last night, with Zion. I'm saying.
I would like to see, I guess, someone other than RJ controlling the pace of the game for 67% of the game.
Right.
And then the last guy that I recently just came to mind from Friend Central, DeAndre Hunter. Guy plays for Virginia.
Okay. Right now, I like him too.
6'7", 225. I think it's his third year right there at UVA. Averaging 14 points a game or 15 points a game on 53% shooting. Wow. 45% for three.
Oh.
Yeah.
Probably doesn't shoot that many.
Yeah, he shoots 2 threes a game, but.
Well, he's a solid shooter. He had a pretty solid shooter.
Having a long wingspan and just being a 3-and-D guy, like coming to the NBA, like that's just all guys are looking for intangible wise. Just length, can shoot. Played in a good defensive system.
They don't have him with NBA comparison on NBADraft.net, but I mean, he's 6'7", 225, like you said.
Yeah.
He's only a sophomore, actually, because I think he sat out a year. But yeah, he's not too flashy. He gets the job done. I've watched him play. He can really defend. He'll be a good NBA player. I don't think he's going to be a franchise guy, but he'll be a good role player. Last guy I'm going to kind of touch on who I think can be a first or second option on an NBA team in the next couple of years, Romeo Langford. Indiana. He has a really complete game. His pro comparison is Chris Middleton, because he can, he can shoot the ball from the outside. He can work that mid-range area. He has like a mature game, right, for an 18-year-old, 6'6", but he got some good size to him, strong. Kind of remind me of like a Jimmy Butler body type, like already. You know what I'm saying? He's getting 17-5-2 on 46 from the field.
See, I don't watch much. Have you seen Indiana play this year?
Yeah, I saw him play a couple of times. I didn't know who he was. I was watching him play, and saw him.
Stand out, though, because a lot of guys have gone to Indiana, except for Oladipo.
Zeller's okay. Pretty good player. Yogi Ferrell's a good player in the NBA. Like, none of them ever are going to be,
standout
guys. But
is that Crean, right? Tom Crean? Something like that, I think, is the coach?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I guess, and the listeners can probably hear, I'm not the most up to date with college basketball, just because college, in my opinion, the whole college basketball is just kind of boring. Like, the talent level, like, I'd rather watch NBA on a night to night basis. So, like, I'm not going to watch UNC versus Clemson over a nice Brooklyn Charlotte Hornets game, baby. Like, that's
okay. So,
long time.
Just to round this out, we kind of wanted to touch on this before, so we might as well say it now before we finish up. We're both pro we like the NBA more. We're pro guys, right? But, I mean, I don't think college basketball is necessarily boring. But, you know, being a former NCAA athlete and kind of just understanding the process of it, it's kind of like, when I look at it, it's kind of like you have a tie to your own university and your own – you take pride in, you know, where you went to school. And if that's not the case, it's not really just a general type thing. Like, yeah, the kids play hard, but it's not like – you don't have the best athletes necessarily in the world like competing. You just have kids that really want to do it. You know what I mean? Or, you know, obviously they're talented, but they're not like top level. You might have that average Joe that, you know, makes the game like, damn, like, why would you do that? Like,
seeing
you
kids can't care for the game doesn't make the game more interesting.
Right. You can't bet on some 18-year-olds basically. Like, yeah. It goes like that. So, you know, I mean, I'm more of a pro guy. I'd rather see the best of the best rather than the guys that are trying to be the best of the best. That's just my opinion.
Not a knock
personally.
To effort and playing within a system.
Definitely not a knock.
We know it's hard to make D1.
It's definitely hard to make Division I. I was a stud in high school. Just patting myself on the back right now. I was a stud in high school, but I still went Division III. So I know how hard it is to make D1. I know how good those guys are, how athletic, you know, how talented and impressive those guys are. But it's definitely just not as exciting as the pros to me. Just on a regular basis.
And another thing, I've kind of been ending on little rants, but the NCAA tournament, I've recently been thinking about this. The NCAA tournament is a trash evaluation of the best team in basketball. A one game elimination.
Oh, so bad. But that's what makes the March Madness. That's what makes it crazy though, because they know a one seed can be caught on the wrong night.
But if you're really a college basketball fan, is that fun? Like watching the team you've enjoyed all year.
You end the year on a sour taste. Like, yeah, come on,
fuck out of here. And then these kids are just one and done, so you just never see them again.
That's not
fun competition to me. Like, at least give me a three game,
a two or a three or something. Yeah. Do like regional. Like, when I saw, like, because I remember this is my example, like, for most recently, I just remember the Lonzo Ball hype. And I remember, like, you know, LeVar Ball just gassing him up all crazy. And he was at UCLA and they were playing so well in the tournament. I was rooting for them. I wanted them to win a championship because I was like, I want to see if this dude LeVar is really a guru or whatever. And when they just lost to Kentucky, so like, Darren Fox killed him, and he just beat him all so abruptly. I was just like, I mean, I guess.
That's the last you're going to see of it. But imagine the three games, how you get to evaluate Lonzo.
Exactly. I wanted to see how he could bounce back. Not as I didn't think about it like that, but I was thinking about it like, I want to see more of this kid. Like, now I see him at his locker talking about, yeah, well, I already declared, like, I'm done. Like, that was my last year. That was my last game. Like, I don't want to see that. Like, I want to, you know what I'm saying? I want to see these kids. I don't know. I wish they kind
of
could
be said about the adversity of a series. You know, and seeing how you go through that and like a playoff run where it's, yeah, you may have lost two games in a row, but you still, like, in a five game series per se, like, you still have the back end to maybe try to reel it back in or you know, show the world something.
Right.
Like, how many guys, like top Division I guys, had high draft stock going to the tournament, have a shitty tournament and then fall 8 to 10 spots. But imagine if the last two games, maybe they lose. Like, they still played well, and they have, like, 18, 19. Like, it kind of, I don't know. It's just a poor way of evaluating the top talent. So.
Just to wrap it up, and like you said, it's kind of a poor way. It's always unfortunate. Like, you got the 2 seeds losing to the 15 seeds or whatever. Catch them on a bad night, a bad shooting night. The 2 seed crumbles up. But if you notice that tournament, last thing, it's really overrated after the first 2 rounds. Like, you kind of have an idea of what's going to happen from Sweet 16 on, because it's like, all right, this team is not surprising anybody anymore. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's kind of how it is. So I would just leave it with that.
It was like a score like 18-18 at the end of like one of the first halves. So one of the NCAA championships. Like, how was that interesting?
We're not gonna bash college basketball too crazy. We're going to let y'all go on that note once again. Pay the players, man.
Fuck.
What Jay-Z say? Fuck the NCAA. Let them get paid, man. But we're going to leave you on that note once again. Thanks for listening.
Let Timmy Swerve close us out. You know what I mean?
Let that Swerve knock in y'all speakers one time.
Thank you for listening. TNT Hoops Episode 8. Once again, we'll try to come back with more content. Give us your likes, suggestions, and thank you again.